Creating seamless customer and brand experiences helps to build brand communities and increase ROI. Sometimes, what happens in brand communication is very different from the experience that people have, feel, and see when interacting with brands. How do some brands manage their customer experience effectively? What should you do to ensure that your audiences get the best experience from your brand? Head of Group Digital Communications at Sasol, MJ Khan, joins me to share some of his customer experience insights.
We don't just allow communicators and communication colleagues to own our narrative. You know, we try and speak to everyone to understand, like, what is this business around?
He also shares his views on the value of advertising and marketing awards when selecting an agency partner.
So, yeah, sure. You know, you could look at being brave from a messaging perspective, but you have to see it through. You have to be authentic, because I would want an agency not just to get their idea of Sasol just from me and my point of view and my subconscious bias. I'd want them to understand the business. I'd want to give them exposure to all aspects of the business that then informs their campaigns.
We talk about the significance of collaboration between the brand and the agency. He also shares how he, his team, and agency partners enable Sasol to remain relevant in the ever-evolving digital landscape.
Relationship building is important for me. I believe that, you know, 50% of any relationship with the organization, with Sasol, is showing up. So if it's important to my colleagues, it's important to me.
This is The Lead Creative. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show and please share and subscribe.
MJ, you wrote your first radio ad in 2001. You've been with agencies and you head up digital for Sasol, where you work with over 15 agencies at the moment. How do you manage all the moving parts to ensure that your various customers and the various people that you talk to get a seamless customer experience?
Great, great question. So for me, I rely on the fundamentals and I embrace the fundamentals. And what I mean by that is, regardless of whether I'm speaking to an internal colleague in comms and marketing or one of our agency partners, I'm always going to ask upfront, what are your objectives? What are you trying to achieve? Who are you trying to talk to? What do you want to try and tell them? And what do you want to make them do with that piece of information? Because really, at the heart of communication, it is about that, right? It's about influencing or evoking a type of behavior or emotion. So upfront, that's regardless of what the campaign is, whether it's a long-term campaign, fireworks campaign, really small campaign, doesn't matter. It always comes back to the objectives, because that's how we can keep ourselves honest, right? So once I figure that stuff out, then we talk, okay, cool. Whatever you're going to pitch in terms of the campaign, the request, whatever it is it credible for the brand? Does it make sense for the brand? Does it fit within our broader strategy and our vision and our purpose? And that's something that we check. So number one, is it credible? Number two, whatever campaign I get on my desk or whatever it is, I always ask, is it sustainable? So the one thing I dislike doing is just sort of on the moment, jumping onto something just for the sake of it, or trying to do a once-off thing without actually looking at how it fits into the broader Sasol narrative, whether that narrative speaks to customers, whether it speaks to social investment, positioning, whatever it is. For me, we have to tell stories, and stories are long-term sort of building blocks for the brand, you know? So everything we do has to be sustainable. It's not this tactical, opportunistic thing. It has to tie into something bigger that we're trying to do. And the third question I always ask internal partners as well as agency partners is it valuable to our stakeholders? Is it valuable to the external market, whether they consist of the customers, the public, whoever those external stakeholders are? Whatever we're doing, you know, is it valuable? So important to me, because what I really dislike doing is, say, for example, working on a campaign where there's no opportunities for participation. There's no opportunities for dialogue. Mm-hmm. There's no opportunities for feedback. Because when people consume your content, they're going to say, okay, so what's in it for me? How do I derive value out of this? You know? And if you can't answer those questions, then you run the risk of creating self-serving content that doesn't have value. So an easy example for me would be something like our bursary program.
Yes.
With the bursary program, you know, I could tell you, Mongezi, that that we gave away 30 bursaries last year or whatever it is. You know, I'm just throwing a random number out there.
Yes.
It was much more than that. But if I took you on that journey with me and said, here's the application process. This is the criteria. This is what we're looking for. And people understood that there was that part of the journey. Then I come back to you and say, cool, out of all the applications, this is how many bursaries we gave. It's a much more richer experience because we showed you the entire journey. We did that long-term building, you know, and that for me is really important. So take people on that journey. And look, it's not about being everything to everyone.
This is true. I think that was going to be sort of, in fact, that was going to be my next question, which is your strategy around communicating with multiple audiences and ensuring that as you communicate with these multiple audiences, from, you know, from the person who's at a filling station to someone who's interested in chemicals to a parent whose child might apply for the bursary, want to be part of the bursary program. How do you ensure all these moving parts and all of these stakeholders and people you reach out to get the same kind of experience from Sasol as a brand?
Ah, great question again. So I actually go back to what holds it all together, which is our purpose, innovating for a better world.
Yeah.
And that then guides the way we do everything, right? So that speaks to really ingenuity. It speaks to improving today so you can be better tomorrow. And that really transcends and plays a role in everything we do. So that's number one as a guidance. Number two, what I do as well when we develop these campaigns is we have feedback mechanisms. So if you want to find more, there'll be an email address, there'll be a website link. You can learn more, you can empower yourself more with that information. Because for those who want to seek more, they will find it, they will look for it, and we will make it easy for them to find
it. Yes. Yeah.
For those who are just interested in it, that's cool. We cover them as well. And for those who are not interested in it, it's okay as well. You know, we're not trying to be everything to everyone, but we are trying to be the best we can be at being the best asshole we can be.
Absolutely.
So we do put those mechanisms in place. That's really important. And I think as a brand as well, especially on digital, we don't ever profess to be this perfect brand. We're always learning. We're always striving. We're always hoping to improve. So if, for example, we launch a program and we find opportunities in that program, say we launch a pilot and we figure something out halfway through, we're very comfortable as a brand to actually document that and say, this is cool, we learned this, this didn't work out this well, so next time we're going to try that. So there's a lot of introspection and reflection that's built into our communication as well. Yeah. And I think that's really helpful.
So your communication strategy really is, to use a cliche term, is a living document that is constantly evolving, that is constantly changing, where the moving parts, I'm guessing, are constantly sort of made to work together and seamlessly. Would that be a correct way of putting it?
With a strong foundation that doesn't change. So yes. For example, like you have to give me objectives. Mm-hmm. You have to show me how it links to the broader strategy. So those things don't change. What changes though is our ability to adapt, to listen, to feedback, and then to evolve. That's really important to me. So we'll put something out, we'll listen, we'll see what sort of feedback we're getting. And feedback comes in so many ways, right? Feedback comes in the form of who's clicking on your ads. Feedback comes in the form of what are people saying about your ads. But feedback also comes in the form of what's happening offline as well. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the retail sort of industry, it's important for me to understand online perception of the brand, but it's equally important for me to understand the offline experience. And I think sometimes people in digital get so obsessed with our own sort of spheres of control and influence that we forget that we're just one part of the bigger cake, you know?
This is
one ingredient in the cake, yeah.
With Sasol being a brand that was formed in the 1950s, how do you translate its authenticity onto digital platforms and keep it current and relevant and now?
So look, like any heritage or blue chip brand in South Africa, you know, you have to evolve, you have to adapt. But that's not just with any blue chip or massive brand. That's any brand. Mm. There's no single brand that can afford to be stagnant or cannot change. You have to change. You have to evolve. And part of that as well is also recognizing and shifting from the way the brand is perhaps perceived to how you want it to be perceived. So for a lot of the older brands as well, you know, where the digital adoption wasn't something that happened in the early 90s, it happened a little later. It's an opportunity not just to necessarily play catch up, but to start charting and developing a new voice, but still keeping the brand values in place.
Absolutely.
So for example, yeah, Sasol's values in terms of safety and things like that, that's 72 years old, you know? So it's not that the values change. It's just that how does it adapt and how do you bring it to life on new platforms?
So it's not, so basically the platforms don't influence what the brand stands for. The platforms don't influence the purpose. The purpose is translated across. It's just that it's now on different and new, well, newish platforms, I suppose.
Definitely, because if you fixated on a platform, number one, you've got no control over that platform. You don't know when that platform's going to shut down. You don't know when there's going to be regulation from a government entity that might close that platform down. Mm-hmm. I mean, TikTok's a classic example, right? Imagine if we fixated on TikTok and tried to adapt to TikTok too much. Then if the government decides tomorrow to shut it down, like what the governments of India did, then what happens to your strategy? What happens to your essence? But if you say, this is who we are and this is how we show up on a platform and you make it about yourself, then it's easy. So for example, for social media, we don't have platform strategies. We definitely play into platform strengths, no doubt about that, right? You need to understand what you're doing on that platform, what value you can offer on that platform, and what do people need from you on that platform? You need to do that, no doubt. But you don't sacrifice who you are to be what you want people to expect of you. And for this, let me draw an experience I had from my advertising days. Mm-hmm. So I used to advertise at some point. Let me not give the category away because it'll just give too much. it'll be quite evident which product I'm talking about. But there was a brand I used to advertise, and this was about 11 years ago. It was quite a big global brand. And this was in perhaps the early days of brands really embracing Facebook.
Yes.
And taking it seriously as a platform. Mm-hmm. And what we found with, that brand in particular is we held the brand essence to a certain esteem because that's the brand equity and that's how the brand positions itself in the market. We found that the Facebook audience was somewhere completely different. They wanted the brand to be something else. They wanted the brand to not be the way the brand envisaged itself, right? And I think part of the mistake we made in those early days was we tried too much to shift over to what the audience wanted as opposed to being more firm and saying, listen, this is what we stand for. Come and meet us. Mm-hmm. And it is a difficult space to play because you veer too far into the into just addressing what a Facebook audience wants. You know, you might lose the essence of who you are, what you stand for.
Yeah,
it's like brands who don't have a radar and they just try and jump on every single trend without saying what's credible for them. I know a few years ago, there was an online retailer that I follow, very popular for books. And they kept giving the play-by-play updates for the World Cup. I'm like, but I don't follow you guys for this.
Yes.
Why are you doing that, you know?
Yeah.
So it really is about, as a brand, you know, coming back to those principles, whatever you're doing, is it credible for you? Does it make sense? And like that there, on a platform as well, you ask the same questions. Is it credible for you? Does it make sense for you to be like this on this platform?
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
You mentioned something about playing to platform strengths, and I don't necessarily want us to get into too much detail about this, but these platform strengths, of course, keep changing. The algorithms keep changing. All these things keep evolving. And as somebody who has been on the agency side in digital and advertising, been on the brand side, what would you say how would you say some of these platforms have evolved? So let's take maybe the top three or four platforms, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, and perhaps Instagram. Even though Instagram and Facebook are sort of, you know, have similar principles. What would you say are platform strengths for a brand or for brands or a brand like Sasol? Let's put it that way.
So it used to be a lot more easily defined in the past.
Yes.
Right. So if you wanted to have a more professional social media platform, you'd naturally gravitate towards LinkedIn. If you wanted it to be social, a little bit more fun, build community, Facebook was really great for that. Twitter, amazing for, you know, proactive engagement, picking up on what's trendy, what's relevant, and being able to insert yourself in conversations. Instagram is a beautiful photo. So it was very easy in the past to define it. What happened, though, is TikTok has come along and has completely disrupted everything, right? Which is why more and more these days, Instagram is trying to be like a TikTok, you know, Facebook is trying to be like a TikTok. We're seeing a shift as well from most of the platforms towards effervescent content. So story content, you know, things that don't live forever. It's very temporary, it's very fleeting. Some brands have embraced that with a lot of success. Some brands have not. I mean, when Twitter tried to do it a few years ago, it just bombed, right? So as much as they tried to introduce that, I think it was Fleets or something, it didn't work out. LinkedIn as well, they tried to introduce the stories. So it's interesting to see what happened is that what used to define the platforms in the past, those lines are much more blurrier now because they all are trying to grab attention. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, right, you want attention, you want dwell time and all of that. And I had a chat this week, I was quite lucky with both Spotify and the TikTok teams. And ultimately goes down to that, like which platform is grabbing the most attention. And that's what these brands sort of gravitate towards. And also, I mean, let's not be naive about it. These platforms are there because they're businesses.
Absolutely.
They need to figure out a way to monetize effectively, you know. And what they might be doing to monetize is not necessarily always in the best interest of a brand or a consumer.
This is true. This is true. And of course, you need to stay on course and stay on purpose, I think, as you've said. One of the things that's becoming bigger and bigger, or at least becoming clearer, is that the lines are blurring across channels. And sometimes the on-the-ground experience for a customer, especially with some brands missing it, right? How do you then work with your teams to reduce the friction between what a person experiences sort of in store and across channels when it's becoming so blurry? So it's becoming blurry now what an ad is and what, you know, an announcement or just a general post is. It's becoming blurry between what an influencer post is to what, you know, a customer who's really raving about your brand is. How do you ensure that these experiences or this customer experience remains seamless and it remains true, that you don't communicate one thing on your, you know, social ads or TV ads, and when I get to a convenience store at Sasol, I get a completely different experience?
So integration is king. And the only way you really get integration is because, in my opinion, because of two things. Number one, you break down silos. You don't have this mentality that says, this is who I am and this is what I bring to the business. Therefore, let me pat myself on the back if I do well. I only do well if everyone does well. So when I measure communication value, I'm really saying, what business value am I offering? How does my efforts translate into something that the business needs? And that really enforces everything I do. So my team as well. You know, it's less about the digital metrics that we can show on paper. I'm not going to go into an integrated meeting and say, look at all the likes and clicks we got. I'm going to go into a meeting and say, cool, how can we support and assist you? What do you need? You know, and what is our role to play? And sometimes the role is huge and sometimes the role is small. But it's really about that integration. That's number one. And number two, just around that as well, you know, I want to fixate on customer service. I don't want to fixate on platform. I want platform to be agnostic. I want it to be seamless. So we have to make sure that if we're engaging with our customers in a certain way online, that translates offline. And that could be in the form of various ways, you know, whether it's education, it's intervention, it's training, making sure that the customer who has a certain perception of the brand online, that translates offline. Because the moment you get that disconnect, you know, that erodes trust.
That makes perfect sense. And I think I like the fact that you mention, of course, fixating on the customer and the customer service and experience rather than the platform, because a lot of the time it feels as though it tends to feel the other way around, where the focus is more on the platform, the trend, rather than the customer and the experience that the customer gets on the ground. And we've seen this ad nauseum with various brands getting into hot water. How do you collaborate effectively with your agency partners? And what do you deem an effective collaboration?
Oh, geez. So different agencies have different strengths, different agencies bring different things to the table. But again, you know, if we have a common vision and we understand what we need to achieve, and we navigate things like ego, when we navigate things like just the complexities of agencies, because I understand that as well. My background's an agency. I know that each agency is not just fighting for the seat at the table, but fighting for a bigger plate. I mean, that's natural, right? That's how it is. But if you can articulate really well, this is the vision, these are the objectives, this is what we need to achieve as a team, and know that we're only going to achieve it together, know that we're only going to achieve it if we play on that same team, the work is always infinitely better and the results are always better. It's always difficult if you play a game where you're briefing three agencies in isolation and you want to play them against each other. And I don't know, that doesn't sit well with me. It's not the way I do things. I'd rather let me empower the different agencies around the room. Let me be very clear about their mandate, but let us all fight for the same vision and the same objective.
Earlier on, as we started, you were mentioning objectives and discipline and all of those being important when you start a campaign, right? So that makes sense at campaign level once you've chosen an agency. But how do you go about making that choice of who the right agency is? Because you only really start realizing or unpacking the fact that we have a similar vision, or we are working towards achieving this vision for my brand as you work together. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, you don't know this.
Okay.
It's really about that synergy that you are able to strike. How do you find that? Like, what's the magic in that?
It's less magic and more effort. So okay. It is work, you know, it speaks to a few things. Number one, it speaks to a very robust procurement process. So upfront, you know, putting it out there, getting the agencies in the room, shortlisting, going through those exercises, being very thoughtful and intentional about the types of questions we ask, what sort of collateral we ask for, you know. So it's less about show me a showreel that has a few awards, because even that as well, I mean, between you and me, you know that, you know, some awards reward performance, some awards reward creativity. So it's less about how many awards you won, but how have you really shifted the needle within those different categories? So upfront, you know, a robust procurement process is really important. But following that, a very strong education process. So, you know, we have to think about what is an agency's perception of Sasol. So for some agencies, they'll engage with me and their point of reference is simply the retail network. And I'm like, that's cool. You know, you understand that we have a retail footprint, but we're a large B2B chemicals manufacturer at our core. You know, we do have an energy component and that's a large part of our business. But in the rest of the world, we're a chemicals manufacturer. We're in 22 countries. It's not just a service station. And that comes through. So for me, education is really important. Taking agencies through, like, this is the brand. This is what we stand for. This is our integrated report. So I'm very, very firm on that. My entire team, every year, we read the integrated report. We speak to business. We don't just allow communicators and communication colleagues to own our narrative. You know, we try and speak to everyone to understand, like, what is this business around? What are our business objectives? What are we trying to achieve for the next 5 years? And I feel an agency needs to be equally hungry as well. So learn about the brands that you're working with, read their documents, understand where they're coming from so that you can really elevate your conversations, because then you can have those business discussions with them, not just pure marketing and comms discussions.
Absolutely. I think that's a refreshing way to look at it. And a way that I think talks to how immersed, I think, even before the agency starts with you, how immersed they are in you as a brand. Mm-hmm. For you to be able to work together. And I want to come back to agencies and awards bit, because I know that, I mean, I sat with you at the Bookmark Awards, and there are some questions that I have for you around the awards and the significance of awards. Something that heads of agencies have told us is that trust is key in creating work that wins clients, that wins customers, that helps their brand partners, you know, win generally in the marketplace. As someone who has been on both sides, what's your approach to building this kind of trust and cultivating this kind of trust between you as the brand and the agency in a way that the agency feels brave and courageous enough to go out there and come back with ideas that even surprise you, but actually change the customer outlook of your brand?
So trust is really loaded, right? It's such a broad term. But for me, it goes back to a few things. Number one, it's about creating a safe space for dialogue, creating a safe space for discord, you know, for disagreements, to challenge each other. That's number one. You know, you create a safe space before you even go out in your market. You say, this is a space where we can discuss, we can understand, but also we can set boundaries. Because as much as we talk about, you know, the need to be brave, it needs to be balanced with comfort. It has to be. Because if you're brave just because of the principle of being brave, you might not necessarily be credible. So I have to balance those two. We can be brave while still being credible. We can be brave while still offering a similar experience online than offline. I mean, how often do you see a brand trying to be brave or trying to take a position on something, but then it comes off as being inauthentic because the business did not believe in it or the business is not geared for it? And you see this happen all the time. So a few years ago, a large motor vehicle manufacturer was called out because they did a huge campaign about the importance of having a woman leadership, until someone pointed out and said, you don't have a single woman in your board of directors or in your group executive. So yeah, sure, you know, you could look at being brave from a messaging perspective, but you have to see it through. You have to be authentic. So
I think this comes back to the point you made earlier about following a trend and jumping on something because it's popular or because it's topical at the time, when it's actually not true about you or doesn't come from a real place in your brand foundation or brand purpose.
And you know, if agencies don't pick up on that, you as a brand, you have that responsibility as a custodian to educate them, to say, cool, you know, I like where you're going with this, but does it actually reflect where we are, who we want to be, where we want to go? And will there be a disconnect between the way you're going to position us and the reality? And I'm not saying that you need to go back to the reality. You always need to evolve. You always need to grow. You always need to be better. But you have to check that. So that for me is really important, right? So you create that safe space, but you educate. You really take the agency on board. And you don't just give them that communication and marketing lens. You try and show them the broader picture, because I would want an agency not just to get their idea of Sasol just from me and my point of view and my subconscious bias. I'd want them to understand the business. I'd want to give them exposure to all aspects of the business that then informs their campaigns. You could come up with a really great campaign, but to your earlier point, Mongezi, if you go to a retail site, and let's just use retail as an example, yes, and there's that disconnect, then there's a very big difference between what you say you are and who you actually are. And we try to eliminate that, you know. So when agencies come with ideas, you know, of course I want to be wowed. Of course, you know, I want to be amazed. I want to be inspired. I definitely want all that, because for me, if an agency can do exactly what I can do, then, you know, where's the value there? If you can do what my team can do, where's the value there? I want to be challenged. Yes. I want to be pushed. But at the same time, I'm still responsible for managing the brand's reputation online. So that's really important. Mm.
And a lot of things are moving more and more in-house, or at least in some brands, things are moving more and more in-house, especially from the digital side of things. And I think you alluded to that now in terms of just what the value that the agency brings versus what your team brings to the table, so that those two parts work together. I know that you've been a judge at the Bookmark Awards for 3 years, or at least 3 times as a judge. Are you seeing any trends over the years that appeal to you as a client, and also any innovations that you find inspiring as a digital marketer?
Oh, geez, another loaded question. I think sometimes the trends we find is, if there's a hot new ad unit or if there's a hot new platform, it's about, let's just jump on this platform, as opposed to what does it do for the business. And I'm so fearful of rewarding innovation simply being someone being first to market on a platform versus actual innovation, as in how did you move your business forward. So when it comes to awards like bookmarks and the judging process there, for me, creativity has value if it translates into a business objective, whether it's sales, customer retention, whatever it is. Creativity for creativity's sake, I mean, you know, it's great, it looks pretty, but how did it move the needle forward? How did it actually achieve a marketing objective for the business?
So
that I think I'm quite firm on.
So it's less about novelty and more about value, I guess, the value that it brought in the and the return that it contributed to in some way or another.
Yeah, I mean, look at a metric like engagement, right?
Yes.
So you might have high engagement, but if all that engagement is negative or that engagement towards your brand is incidental, then what is the value of that engagement? Mm. So we as judges and we as marketing professionals should expect more. You know, it's that age-old debate about how do we move away from the vanity metrics? Well, how do we move away from metrics that don't actually push the needle forward? Engagement for engagement's sake has to be interrogated. Like, what does that engagement lead to? Does it lead to more product sampling? Does it lead to sentiment, brand affinity? What's that next step? It can't just be engagement. People talking about the brand. Okay, fine. But what does that mean?
Awards also help agencies to win a place in the client's heart and mind as well, right? That's one of the things that they help with, or some of the things that they help with in that client agency relationship. How much do awards matter to you as a client when looking at a potential agency partner? How much does that influence your decision or your ability to look at them favorably or not?
Not that much, eh? Not that much. I mean, look, it's great to have relevant case studies and it's great to package things. But, and it's important, you know, I'm not going to downplay the value of awards. It's important for various reasons. I think sometimes we downplay the value of rewards from a morale perspective. Morale is important. If we do great work and if we reward it and acknowledge for it by, you know, some award or something, and my colleagues are happy because of that, I love that. You know, often we feel like there needs to be some clear link between here's an award and here's like absolute, you know, sales destruction, whatever it is. And there's so many other, destruction I'm using in a very positive way, like we've killed it. Mm-hmm. But there's so many other ways to look at rewards and to celebrate rewards. I think for me, though, it's like, yeah, sure, rewards are great. And, you know, who doesn't want to have that pat on the back? And it's very, you know, some of it is ego, and I recognize that. But in terms of choosing an agency partner, it's more about the relevance of that award. Like, you could have won 15 awards for the work you've done on a certain category. But if I can't see how that translates into understanding my sector better, then I just wonder, you know?
Yeah.
So it's little things like that. It's not clear cut, as in if you have the most Lou Reeds or Lions in the room, you're going to get the work.
That I think that again sheds a great bit of light in terms of where that's concerned. The question I think that I then kind of have, and I think this is one of the things that sometimes agencies can debate as to whether it's worth, you know, putting money into entering an awards process or not. And this is, do awards improve an agency's chance of being in your radar when they were small and weren't in your radar prior to the awards?
I think they do. I mean, look, I was at Bookmarks with you last week, right? And I saw a few agencies like really cleaning up in niche spaces. So that has left an impact on me. Mm-hmm. So if I do consider that, then part of the procurement process would be telling the procurement guys, hey, you know, this is an agency that's doing cool.
Okay.
Obviously, it's not as clear cut as they want some awards, give them some work.
Yeah.
But, you know, they form part of my radar. If they speak to me now, I know they've got a little bit of that credibility that's coming. So there's certainly value in that. But also from an agency perspective, you want to be that agency that wins awards because you want to attract the best talent.
This is true.
You want to retain the best talent. Mm-hmm. So there's also that aspect of it as well. And I think part of this discussion that you and I are having is it's not a clear-cut thing where it's just about winning the award or awards trump everything. It's about what do those awards give you? Do they give you opportunities? Do they sell you before you even enter the room? Do they allow you to attract and retain the best talent? Mm. I think there's a lot of factors that go into it, which is what makes it so exciting. And I never, ever want to be reductionist about it.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Very briefly, MJ, what are some of your strategies to ensure that the digital and offline customer experience are not disconnected?
So integration is really, really important for me. Relationship building is important for me. I believe that, you know, 50% of any relationship with the organization, with Sasol, is showing up. So if it's important to my colleagues, it's important to me. So again, you know, for the retail customers, as much as we've got an entire retail team that manages that, you know, from a customer experience center to operations, to franchise managers, to marketing, and a shout out to all those colleagues. If it's important for them, it's important for me, because as much as I sit in a group role, I need to make sure that I integrate, I understand what my colleagues' business challenges are, I understand those opportunities, therefore I can give a better service. So integration is key, number one. Number two, it's about sort of assuming good intent. You know, I don't ever do anything where I assume bad intent. And this goes to everything I do. So one part of what I do and what I'm really proud of is governance. So I author, for example, the social media policy, the retailer social media policy, and those policies are meant to empower. Those policies assume good intent. They assume that, you know, people are going to use sound judgment, etc. If I developed governance that was inhibiting, if I developed governance that was just thou shalt not, that sets the tone, right? That sets the scene, and that almost becomes the terms of engagement. So I'm very intentional about that. I'm intentional about integrating. I'm intentional about being on the ground. I'm intentional about understanding the business problems, the business challenges. But I'm also intentional about ensuring that the governance I develop enables, empowers, and doesn't diminish. So yeah, those are just two of the things. I mean, the third thing as well is talking to people, not just marketing and comms people. I mean, as much as I love engaging with those colleagues and as much as they're responsible, I talk to franchise managers. I talk to retail account managers, and this is specifically for the retail business, right? I talk to different colleagues to get a better understanding of, like, tell me about everything. Tell me about logistics. Let me learn about everything. Yeah. So that's what I do. I try and educate myself.
Yes.
I humble myself a lot. I go and learn. I assume good intent, and then I produce governance that empowers and enables.
And in instances when these are disconnected, these experiences are disconnected from a you know, a customer side of things, from a stakeholder side, or whatever else, basically, in instances when there are disconnects, how do you then use digital to reduce that friction?
Sure. So it comes back to an earlier point I made about you know, credible, sustainable, and then valuable to the user. So we can only be valuable to a customer if it's very clear that when a customer has an earnest complaint or a challenge, that we are able to resolve that. So every single piece of content that we create, every single campaign, I always have some feedback mechanism built in. So on the retail side, let's say, for example, a customer goes to a site and has a challenge, whatever that issue is, they need to be able to know that A, our social media platforms are a space for them to raise their concerns, and then we can then escalate it and plug it in through to our customer center. They need to know that if they go into Sasol.com, it's very clear that this is how you can lay a complaint. So we try and be in as many places as possible that makes sense for us to be in, so that if there's a disconnect, we can then resolve it. So that for me is really important. But also what's important for me as well is to make sure that the other spaces that are not digital also have that same ethos in terms of customer service. So as much as I can manage what's happening on the digital platforms in terms of our responses, I'm constantly checking in with my colleagues. Okay, so what is our response matrix for Hello Peter, for example?
Yes.
If you're getting a complaint coming in the call center, take me through that workflow. And that, again, speaks to integration. I'm not there to celebrate how we resolve things on social media. I'm there to celebrate customer experience across the brand.
Thank you very much, MJ. I think I took a lot out of that, but I think in closing, you've almost doubled back to a point that you made earlier, which is a big one that I take, which is fixate on the customer and the customer experience, not the platform, which is sometimes missed. Thank you, MJ. That was a really great conversation.
This is wonderful. Actually, super honored to be part of this. I had a look at the website a few weeks ago. I mean, I've been a big fan of yours for a while.
Thank you.
Looking at the caliber of the guests that you've interviewed, I'm honored to be among them. So thank you so much.
Thank you. You are a rock star through and through, and thank you for your time.
Much love.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.